grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Eight minutes after the hour of 5, as yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, taking you all home in the drive home at 5. And it was earlier today, when I was on with Juliette Huddy, that we had the breaking news sounder, as it was announced that Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Facciabrutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, that the governor's office is being investigated by the FBI over its practice of hiring executive chamber officials to random agencies and public authorities. And then the story broke. So I felt, who better than to go to the guy who's got his finger on the pulse of the governor and everyone else who operates on behalf of the New York State government. By the way, now rated the most corrupt in America, both sides of the aisle, Democrat and Republican, than Ken Lovett, Albany bureau chief for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. Thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5 again, Ken.
Good to be back.
Okay, so with the blaring headlines that were ripping online earlier today, what can you tell us about the FBI and its investigation of the Cuomo administration?
This is a really confusing one. This comes out of the Eastern District, Brooklyn U.S. Attorney's Office, and apparently they're looking into the Cuomos have hired a lot of people that they hire for the executive chamber, his office, his suite of offices, but they put them on the payroll of various state agencies and public authorities. That way it doesn't look like they're jacking up the cost of the governor's office too much. Honestly, we've written these stories about Governor David Patterson, about George Pataki, all the way back to Rockefeller. It's been written in other states. So it's a little surprising, and I'm not clear that this is exactly what they're looking for. That's what's out there right now. But it's hard to believe that's what they're focused on, because I'm not quite sure where the crime is there, unless people aren't showing up for work. A lot of the people the governor hired are former Obama and Clinton staffers as he's gearing up for a potential 2020 run. Maybe they think it's no-show jobs. I don't know at this point. But it is, it's strange for sure.
Well, could it have to do at all, Kenneth Lovett, when Andrew Cuomo brought back his very dear Kumbata Cheech into his administration, Joe Pococo, who was then given the title of executive deputy secretary, blank, 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 to the governor? I mean, there were so many words in that title. It's a tongue tire.
Yeah, I don't think it's part of that, but you know, at this point, who knows? Because that case came out of the Manhattan DA's, the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office. This seemingly is coming out of the Brooklyn one, the Eastern one. So I'm not sure there, but certainly it's not good for a governor who is now heading into his reelection year in 2018, who already is going to watch a number of his associates and close friends, as you mentioned, Joe Pococo, they're heading to federal trial on federal corruption charges in the new year. So this, on top of that, is not a good thing for a governor. Already people are questioning whether or not this is maybe, you know, Trump's Justice Department going after a potential 2020 challenger. Obviously, there's no evidence of that at this point, but certainly people are talking about it.
Okay, so let's look at it here. We've got the Eastern District, downtown Brooklyn, the feds investigating the Cuomo administration. As you had mentioned, the U.S. Southern District, they are putting nine Cuomoites on trial, led by Joe Pococo. And I'm looking at the response of the governor's spokesperson earlier today to the second investigation, and he was vitriolic. It's almost as if he was saying that the FBI's acronym stood for Forever Busting Italians.
Certainly they called it absurd. The reaction was, if that's what they're actually looking at, it's absurd. And they provided a number of media accounts dating back to 1984 in New York and other states where reporters have written that, you know, governors have basically stashed away employees in state agencies. They actually worked in the governor's office, but were being paid by state agencies. Now, look, maybe they put them in a public authority or an agency that is getting federal money, and maybe they said that this person is being hired for that program. Who knows? It's too soon to say. We don't have those details, but it's certainly not an uncommon practice. So that's why it's kind of surprising at this point.
Well, corruption in New York State is not uncommon at all. So maybe finally the feds is trying to put a finger in the dike. But let's go back to the case that will come to the forefront that is being waged. Originally it was Preet Bharara. It's now U.S. Attorney Kim of the Southern District against Joe Pococo and nine other associates who were working in the Cuomo administration. In fact, this is so important to Cuomo's political future. I go back to the time that he was giving the eulogy at his father Mario Cuomo's wake and also at the funeral mass.
And my father's third son, who sometimes I think he loved the most, Joe Prococo, really did an extraordinary job, and they did an extraordinary job with his funeral, and we want to thank them.
Now, I see Joe Prococo on a regular basis here, Ken Lovett. He works for Jimmy Dolan in Madison Square Garden. He has some kind of vice presidential position in charge of community affairs. So I see him going in and out. But what has he been charged with? And how is it involved with the other eight Cuomoites who are also up on very serious charges?
Well, the other eight aren't all people who worked for them. Some of them were donors and some of them were bidders and contractors who got work for them. There was another aide, a guy, Elaine Calieros, who is a big-time economic development guy, nanotech guy for the state government for years. He is up on charges. No, Prococo is basically accused of accepting bribes from companies with business before the state. And, you know, they're looking into what he did, for that. And, you know, he says he's innocent, but that is going to be a huge trial. We know that the governor has been in and talked to federal prosecutors while they were investigating the case. He has acknowledged he could be called as a witness in these cases. The trials were broken up into two trials, so you'll have the Prococo one and then the other ones later in the year. But the Prococo one's supposed to start early in the year.
But this guy, Joe Prococo, was Andrew Cuomo's shadow. Wherever Andrew went, Joe Prococo went. When there was dirty work that had to be done or some politics had to be attended to, he would dispatch Joe Prococo. Has the governor actually directly stated that he was completely unaware of what Prococo was being charged with and his other associates?
Well, yes. He has said that he knew Prococo left the administration to run Cuomo's 2014 campaign. He became the campaign chairman. At that time, Prococo told the governor, look, I don't think I'm coming back. I'm going to take on some private clients while I'm doing this. The governor claims he never asked or never found out who those private clients were. It turns out they had business before the state, including Core Development in Syracuse that was paying him a lot of money and some group that's opening up a power plant and wanting to in Orange County. And they hired Prococo's wife as some kind of teacher. The governor says he never asked. A lot of people, you know, some people say that he's a micromanager and how could he not ask. Others wonder if he didn't want to ask. Prococo wasn't supposed to come back to the administration, but ultimately did, and that started a lot of this.
I do appreciate that, Ken Lovett. As you know, he is always on top of breaking news stories out of Albany as the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. But let me just say this about Joe Prococo. He is the wartime consigliere for Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I. He was groomed and trained in this art of political leg breaking by Mario Faccia Bruta himself. And clearly, he and Andrew made their bones in politics together. The problem for Andrew is that Joe Prococo knows where all Andrew's bones are buried, personally and politically. And the fact, as Ken had mentioned, that his wife is implicated in this, although hasn't been charged, I think we're going to be looking at the same strategy by the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Southern District to dangle over Joe Prococo's head the fact that his wife could also be charged with very serious crimes that follow with very serious, heavy time that you would have to do, even if it's at a camp fed in the system. And that may well be something that entices Joe Prococo to break the code of Omerta. Now, can you imagine what the Night of the Seven Fishes would be this year if Prococo was around? Because remember, nothing precludes him from sitting at the table of the Cuomos. And I can see Andrew Cuomo looking to Joe Prococo, the brother that isn't a blood brother, but closer to him than even Chris Cuomo, pretty boy over at CNN, is, and saying, hey, you want the bacala? You want the scungili? Or you want the clams casino? You understand, Joe? You better clam up if you know what's good for you and take the code of Omerta with the feds.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
77 WABC.
We never
want
to go to Rikers Island. Him used to walk and screw up in fierce.
All hell is breaking loose on Rikers Island each and every day. It seems like there's another headline story where you see the inmates, those who are being detained either because they didn't make bail, they were doing less than a year, so they're not being shipped upstate, or they're pending some kind of a court hearing, end up in groups now attacking COs. You saw the video back towards Thanksgiving. It involved captains who were on patrol, two of them who have since been chastised by their union for abandoning one who caught a beatdown from a group of inmates. And then just yesterday, as we became aware that a officer while on duty caught a horrific beatdown from some gang members on the line to discuss this continued escalation of violence against the correctional officers on Rikers Island and in the other correctional facilities of New York City is the corrections officer's benevolent president, Elias Husamuddin. Thanks for joining us again, Elias.
Hey, Curtis, how you doing, man?
Not good, because I saw the video after Thanksgiving of the correctional captain who caught that horrible beatdown, although, boy, he magnificently fought back.
Yes, he did.
Although his colleagues abandoned ship on him.
Yeah, you know, we're in a situation where you damn if you fight, you damn if you run, you damn if you don't do anything. Unfortunately, honestly, Curtis, what the mayor's done in the last 4 years by watering down punitive SAG, watering down the inmate discipline, these guys know that there's nothing that they can do that's going to cause them any type of problem, that they can do it and get away with it. And we got a serious gang problem on Rikers Island, and we're just calling on the mayor to do his damn job. At this point, he needs to do his job or step off.
Well, explain.
He's going to cause one of us to get killed.
Well, Elias, explain this most recent attack against one of your members.
Here it is. We had a correction officer who was attacked, jumped by three MS-13 inmate gang members. Basically, he was doing his job and giving orders and making sure that the inmates don't come out of their cell when they're not supposed to. They didn't like it. They decided that they wanted to jump them, and they did, Curtis. And this is something that is happening. These guys are arresting the gang members, the MS-13, the Bloods, the Crips, and they're sending them to jail, and all of a sudden we have a mayor and a board of corrections and a city council who seem to think that crime in jail should be treated different than crime in the streets. And unfortunately, that's what's happening. They're being rearrested. Darcelle Clark in the Bronx, she's charging them, remanding them. But when they come back to the jail, the mayor has watered down punitive segregation. The mayor has watered down the rules so bad that the inmates know that nothing that they do once they get back to the jail, they're not going to be held accountable for anything, especially if they're 16 to 21 years old.
Well, it used to be if you attacked a correctional officer, you'd end up spending 30 days in the hole. You'd be segregated from the inmate population. You'd be in a cell on your own 23 hours a day, maybe 1 hour out for a little exercise. Are you guys permitted to do that any longer to maintain order?
No, that's the problem. That's the problem. We're not, and the little that we have left is watered down so bad. Let me tell you something, Curtis. An inmate can attack the correction officer, be rearrested, go to the Bronx, get remanded, but when he comes back to Rikers Island or to one of the city jails, we can't put him in punitive segregation. We can't segregate him. We can't take away his visits. We can't take away his commissary. We can't do anything as a result of what has happened under the mayor in the last 4 years, along with that crazy lady called Melissa Mark Viverito and the city council members. They've totally did everything to endanger the lives of not only correction officers, the inmates as well. I mean, we have 700 inmates who've been stabbed, slashed, and cut in the last 4 years. We have more than 2,000 correction officers assaulted. All of this is under this mayor and his new rules, and he hasn't been able to reduce the freaking crime behind bars, but he's always boasting about it. Even in the article talking about 41% increase in the rearrest, that's not the freaking problem. Rearresting them is not the problem. Bringing them back to the city jail and segregating them and putting them in punitive segregation or taking away privileges from them is what we need to do. And this guy and the rest of these people have pretty much taken that away, and it's something that we're fighting like hell to get back.
Well, Elias, they've all said, oh, you know, if only you closed Rikers Island. But I've noticed that some of the other cases of attacks on correctional officers have occurred off Rikers Island, whether in the tombs or on the barge or other facilities, having nothing at all to do with Rikers Island.
Listen, Curtis, closing Rikers Island is a land grab. That's all that is. That's about property. That's about taking that 420 acres. That's not about reducing crime, because like you just said, the last correction officer that got sliced, cut by an inmate, it happened in the tombs. The last inmate who got 100-and-something stitches in his face, it happened in the Bronx. So it's not where the jail is located. That's not what the problem is. The problem is we need a law and order mayor. Can you find Rudolph Giuliani and think maybe he can come back and help us? We need a law and order mayor, and we need a law and order commissioner. We need somebody that's not afraid to enforce the law and not afraid to back and support the men and women who are the police of the jails and responsible for law and order in jail. And that's the problem that we're having. This mayor is proving not to be, has proven not to be that person.
Well, do appreciate that. That's Elias Husamuddin. He's the president of the Correctional Officers Benevolent Association. As inmates have just ratcheted it up, they're attacking correctional officers. You probably saw that video of the correctional captain who's viciously attacked on Thanksgiving Day. His colleagues abandoned ship on him. They'll pay a price for that. And then this most recent attack, followed by a series of other attacks, and the mayor seems to be oblivious to it. And all he keeps saying is, we'll close Rikers Island.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Sack full of toys means a sack full of joys for millions of girls and for millions of boys. When Christmas Day is here, the most wonderful day of the year.
Toys. Don't worry about Toys R Us going Chapter 11. There's plenty of toys out there, but when you're going toy shopping now for your kids or grandchildren, or maybe even yourself, you got to think back over the decades to what your most favorite toys or least favorite toys were. And Bill Ervolino, columnist for The Record, and the entire record is dedicated to laying out all the toys in all the eras, even for the cadavers and formaldehyde, the alpacas out there. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Bill.
Thank you. We did 100 years of toys going back to the 1910s. And followed, you know, just the trends. Certain of these toys from the beginning are still around. And some of them, you know, they disappear for 20 years or they come back again. And it was just interesting to watch. I have to say, I remember when my niece is 20 now, but when she was 2, she came to my house one day and I had her for 4 hours and I'd realized I had no toys in the house. I gave her a box of Band-Aids and she played with it completely satisfied for 4 hours. If I had given her something else, I don't know. A lot of the toys I got when I was a kid, I played with them for 10 minutes and I couldn't stand them anymore. What about you? Did you have a favorite?
Oh, yeah. The first one I ever got was the Radio Flyer Wagon.
Uh-oh.
The Little Red Wagon. And you see, I fancied myself, I wanted to be a garbage man at a very young age, like at 3 or 4. So I would take that little red wagon and I would pick up all the garbage. First off, in the alleyways where I was living at that time in the south side of Chicago, 46 and Rockwell. And then when we moved back to Brooklyn and to Queens, well, I would take that red wagon and fill it up with trash. And I thought, boy, one day I'm going to be a sanitation man.
You know, the Passon family, which created that wagon, they still run that company. And he was very influenced by the Ford assembly lines. That's where he, when he started to mass producing. I mean, there's two things that really come up when you're looking at the last 100 years and toys, because they've always been toys. But in the last 100 years, you have two things: mass production, which allowed, you know, kids all over the country to have the same toy. And then also advertising, first on the radio and then on TV, which made us insane when we were kids. We would see, I remember there was this game, Hands Down. It had a great commercial. It was the stupidest game. And I got it. I played it for 10 minutes, but I had to have this thing. It looked so exciting in the commercial. And a lot of things, I think, were sold that way. You know, they just looked so good. But once you had those commercials, and in the 50s and 60s, eventually they had to regulate them a little because the kids were going nuts.
Well, you know which other one I liked because it's almost synonymous with newspapers, especially the Sunday papers with the comics. Silly Putty.
Yeah.
You would take the Silly Putty out of the egg. You would smash it on the face of Bill Ervolino, you're right above your byline. And then I would sort of like smoosh you out in all different directions, ball it back up, and start the process all over again. It was so great. It was like the first Xerox machine.
Well, I remember in that period, I'm living in Queens. I've got my Sunday Daily News with Dick Tracy on the front and Dondi on the back, all the comics. And I was doing the same thing. And you could put it on paper. This is one of those great things that, like I said, can keep a kid occupied and really didn't cost your parents too much money. A lot of these toys today, you look at toys like the PlayStation and the Wii. I mean, these things are hundreds of dollars. And, yeah, and the kids think nothing of asking you for one.
Yeah.
And kids, that's what they're doing. But, I mean, I can't remember. Mostly I got socks and underwear for Christmas. I don't know about you. I would get usually one toy. And, I had guns, so I would like a little things for that. And I had my typewriter when I was 10, because I was like a war correspondent at a young age. I had a typewriter when I was 10 and a record player when I was 13. Those were like two things that I felt were like really toys that were like had a purpose in my life, because I was interested in music and writing. But, you know, the Slinky, the BB gun, the this, the that. This was all part of your arsenal of things that you had. And keeping up with the Joneses, your Slinky, I don't know what else. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned
Silly Putty. Oh, the Dunkin' yo-yo, the yo-yo, you know, walk the dog, put him to sleep, all the tricks that you could play with a Dunkin' yo-yo and compete against your friends.
Yeah, the yo-yo goes all the way back to, like, ancient Egypt. And the guy that created the modern yo-yo, he came up with a certain type of loop in there that allowed it to do these tricks. And then suddenly it became another toy altogether. And, the yo-yo was a great toy that comes back every 20 years or so. I mean, it's always around. You can always buy one. But it suddenly gets very popular. It's also a toy like Rubik's Cube that has tournaments. They get together, these people that are such fans of this game and or this toy, and they have to just do all of this stuff.
Now, I noticed the other toy you have there is the Etch-A-Sketch. Since both Donald Trump and Hillary are baby boomers, they wish they had Etch-A-Sketches instead of emails and the kinds of communications that take place now. Because remember, I could when I was a kid, I would issue a death list of all my friends that I wanted to kill, put it on the Etch-A-Sketch, and my mom would walk in the room, and I would shake it, and it would disappear forever, in perpetuity, never to be recovered.
So who did you kill? You must have been very confused.
Oh, no. I had a lot of Gavones living in the neighborhood, Canarsie, East New York, Brownsville, I wanted to kill. But the point was, there was no hard drive then. Once you eliminated it from the Etch-A-Sketch, it was gone.
I know, but that was always difficult, because if you did something you really liked, if you made a nice picture, you knew sooner or later you had to get rid of it or buy another one. And that was dust on the inside. A stylus was moving up and down. I think a Frenchman created that. He was an electrician. And he invented it in France, and then it became like a real must-have here in the 60s.
And then
everyone had one.
Then there was Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah.
You always wanted to pit your Rock'em Sock'em Robot against your friend's Rock'em Sock'em Robot and knock their block off.
Knock the block off. I mean, if anybody listening did not, you know, is too young to remember that, I mean, they're still around. They're smaller now. But you would just hit it just right, and that head would go flying up on a spring, and that was like the climax of the fight, and you'd go on to the next round. Those were fun. Those were a lot of fun.
And then naturally, the Easy Bake Oven. I remember my sisters; they fancied themselves as future Betty Crockers, you know, and they were constantly dabbling with their Easy Bake Oven, you know, trying to make pies, cakes.
I mean, the Easy Bake is one of the toys, like the chemistry. You know, when the chemistry set came out in the early like 20s and 30s. It was geared exclusively to boys. There was no, you know, that was it. And the Easy Bake Oven was geared to girls. And eventually they had to make it a gender neutral thing. I mean, if you watch TV food channel and so on, most of the chefs are men. But, you know, we had a girl from New Jersey in 2012 that, her name was McKenna Pope. She started a whole campaign because her brother wanted an oven. And so they changed it so it's not just a pink oven anymore. Sometimes it looks like a microwave now. And you can make things in it, and it's gender neutral. But, you know, by the time the chemistry set came out that was geared just for boys, Madame Curie had won 2 Nobel Prizes already. But that was apparently not important.
But I noticed, Bill Ervolino, you have the G.I. Joe doll. But you don't have the alternative if you wanted to be a seafarer, which was Milton Bradley's Battleship.
Ah, Battleship. Yeah, I don't have it. There's a lot of things we couldn't put on. Well, what do you remember about Battleship?
Oh, boo, boom, boom, boom. You know, whenever I would look at Milton Bradley's Battleship, I would say, oh, the Gulf of Tonkin, that crazy LBJ who used that as an excuse for us to get in the Vietnam War. And I would think, Milton Bradley's Battleship, boom, boom, boom.
Well, the war toys became very controversial, actually, in the Vietnam era, and a lot of parents didn't want to get them for kids. Similarly, the Barbie doll, like in the last 20 years or so, became a controversial thing. Like, is her body image, you know, being a negative thing to girls? And, you know, so, but meanwhile, she's, for 40 years, she's fine, and now all of a sudden they have to make her more realistic.
Now, question is, for people who have a vicarious interest in looking at your very detailed list, how can they get it online?
NorthJersey.com. It should be starting up about tomorrow. It'll be in the paper for 10 days, each day in the paper, but online at NorthJersey.com. 100 years of toys.
Oh, no, it's absolutely phenomenal, ladies and gentlemen. It'll take you back to the 1910s, right, and the Erector set. And then you just keep going through the decades and you see all the toys that you either wanted or couldn't get or you purchased for your children or grandchildren. Absolutely great work, Bill Ervolino.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
5:56 on the drive home at 5. This is a first. With all the Gabons and Jadrules I've ever known who have been involved in organized crime, I've never seen an attorney launch on their behalf what we call the Stunata defense. And you know what the Stunata defense is? That I'm special ed. This guy shows up with his attorney after being busted with other mobsters choking on their lobsters and basically appeals to the judge and says, I couldn't even sell these cheap cigarettes. And even though I brought them in untaxed from North Carolina, I shouldn't get any time behind bars for selling untaxed cigarettes because I was lousy at it. And then he came in with friend of the court briefs of other Gavones who were selling the untaxed cigarettes who complained they didn't want to work with him. He wasn't reliable. He wasn't doing a good job. And in fact, over and over he said, it ended up costing me money. I made absolutely jack diddly squat nothing. And could you believe it? The judge actually sat there and was thinking to himself, hey, maybe there's something to this special ed Stunata defense. I call it the Gavone defense. Well, He was sentenced earlier today, but so far, all I can get is hush, hush, mush, mush from the court authorities, who should have been more forthcoming. Could you imagine if this Stunata defense works for this Gavone, how it could work for other Gavones?